Hello, and welcome to the Luna's Reading Corner podcast, where we bring your questions to your favorite authors. I'm your host, Lacey Lawaji, and New Moon Girls member Valentina joined me all the way from Serbia when we chatted with Jessica DeGeorge. Jessica's the author of the Castle Glower series, the Dragon Slipper series, and other books for kids and teens. Let's listen to what she has to say about her books and life as a writer. So thanks so much for chatting with us today, Jessica. Our members are big fans of your work, and in preparation for this interview, some of them have sent us questions. So Valentina and I will be asking our own questions, as well as questions that have been submitted by our members. Are you ready to get started?
I am ready.
Good. I'll start out with some general questions about your life as a writer, and then Valentina will lead up the questions directly related to your work.
Okay.
So the first question is one that we get every time we talk to an author from Girls, so this is one that we've made standard with all our authors, and that is the question of what inspires your story ideas.
Oh, anything? Everything? I wrote one of my books because I saw a really bad movie that was set in Romania, and I thought, wow, if I was going to set a story in Romania, I would do da-da-da-da-da, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then from that, I got Silver in the Blood, which when I've told people who have seen that movie, they're like, what?
Wow.
No, it's not even the same. It's just that I wanted to set a story in Romania all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And, you know, just one night when I was really tired, I just suddenly thought, you know, what if you went into a dragon's cave to, like, steal some gold and it turned out to be full of, like, shoes, or it was like a big closet, or, you know, or they bred dogs or something instead of collecting gold. And, you know, there was dragon slippers. And it just, like, a random thought. And I'll just sort of keep thinking about it.
That's Valentina has a question specifically about dragon slippers, what you just mentioned, a little bit later. So we'll be able to go into that in some more
Great.
Depth. What do you like the best about writing, and what do you like the least?
My favorite thing is just starting a new story, just to, like, say, oh my gosh, I've got this great idea, and just start writing it out. Because it's exciting and, like, ooh, new story, and I wonder how this is going to end and all that stuff. And I guess the least favorite thing is the editing. When my editor's like, you know, I just thought the ending of this was too long. And it's like, oh, but it's my favorite. Now I have to take parts of it out.
Yeah.
So that's no fun. Because when I send it to my editor, it's because I'm done. You know, I've thought of everything I could think of for this story. So that I'm like, oh, no, I'm done.
So how much time do you typically spend in editing? I think that a lot of girls are not totally familiar with that aspect of the writing job. So I'm curious about how much time you spend on that.
It really depends. Right now I'm finishing, like, today should be finished with editing Saturdays, which is going to be the last book in the Castle series.
Yes, that's exciting.
Yeah. Ooh. And it was really easy because I knew exactly what I wanted to do with the story and, you know, where I wanted them to go. And so I sent it to my editor and she's like, great, this is perfect. There's one little part. There's, like, a couple of chapters towards the end where she basically wanted more. Like, you know,
okay.
They discover this new people and she's like, I really want to explore where they live just a little bit more. So I basically just am writing a new chapter and sticking it in there to give people a little more view of this world, and then I'm done. So that's only taken a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm reading through. There's a couple of places where maybe somebody's just being annoying, or, you know, some of the dialogue, somebody's just being irritating, and I have to make them make their point without being obnoxious, which is common with me. You know, in the first draft, Lila is usually really a brat and nobody likes her. Then I go back. And so there's just a couple of things like that. And then I'm just adding this new chapter. So that's only taken a couple of weeks. But I have a new series starting next year called Stolen Crowns. And I have actually rewritten the book three, maybe four times, like, from scratch almost.
Wow.
Like, editor loves the idea of the book, loves the story, loves the characters, and then is like, but it's just somehow not working. And so I kind of went back to the drawing board and like, well, what if they did this instead? Okay, that's okay, but it's still not there. And so this last time what I did was the entire book was from one person's point of view, and she it's a group of people that their parents were fairy tales, basically. Like the parents were Snow White, Sleeping Beauty. And you know, it's supposed to look kind of like Maleficent, the movie, like a little bit darker, and you know, what would it really be like to grow up that way? You know, what would it really have been like for Snow White? She lived in the woods, you know, in hiding for years, and so what's she like now, kind of thing. And so their kids have sort of inherited some skills and some powers. So it was all from Snow White's daughter's point of view, and halfway through the story, she goes off with a couple other people, and the rest of the group, Cinderella's daughter, Snow White's son, her brother, they all head off in another direction on this quest. You never see what happens to them in the whole book. Because I thought, oh, I'll write a second book about what happens to them. And my editor was like, I just feel like I need to know now what's happening to them. So I basically wrote a new book that was from the point of view of one of Sleeping Beauty's daughters. And then I shuffled the chapters together, if that makes sense. So now all the odd numbered chapters are the original chapters from the first draft of the book, basically. All the even numbered chapters are brand new.
With the new
Oh,
perspective
man.
in there.
So I've essentially written the first two books in the series and then s merged them together into one book. And so that has taken like over 6 months. And really the directions from my editor, you know, sometimes editorial notes, and this is what a lot of people don't know, you know, if you're not in it, you don't know, you don't understand. Sometimes my editorial notes, like with the Castle books, are things like, you know, Lila's a bit obnoxious here, or I don't understand who said this, you know, if it doesn't say said Seely or something. I don't, you know, and they're little nitpicky things, or like, you know, this chapter's a little too long or something like that. And then sometimes editorial notes are like, the whole ending of this book didn't work. And they won't change anything. You know, your editor does not write the book for you. It's my story. They really will not even change a comma without my permission. If there's a comma in the wrong spot, they just circle it and I'm supposed to do it because it's my book, you know? So it's like you get stuff like, I really just hate the whole ending. And you're all, okay. I gotta figure out how to make it unhated. So it really just depends. And yeah, the longest I've spent is probably this Stolen Crowns book has taken just months and months and months. And before that, it was Silver in the Blood, really. I sort of went through and massively overhauled the one character in that book. Just went through and she's one of the main viewpoint characters in that book. Just was really too, well, I keep saying obnoxious, but it's true. I mean, she was outspoken, but she was rude. She was being rude all the time when she talked. And so it's like, you don't like her because it's not that she's, you know, bold. It's that she's being awful to everyone. So I thought that one, and that was maybe 4 months or something of going back and kind of rewriting her parts. And I thought that was like the worst thing I'd ever done. And then came this book.
Before you were writing full time, what other jobs have you had?
I was a school secretary for many years. Like I was actually a registrar is what I was called. I was the only one in the entire district here in Salt Lake, for elementary schools. Usually registrars are the people who do classes, you know, for high school kids. But I was at a school with an elementary school that has such incredibly high turnover that my entire job was to enter and exit kids from our school system every day. So, you know, kids would go, there was a really high population of kids who would, you know, go back to Mexico for 3 months to visit family. So yeah, so I just like held these kids' records for him and checked people's immunizations when they moved in and just did that all day long for 3 years. it was really kind of crazy because people, I would go to meetings at the district and be like, well, what do I do in this and when that? And they're like, I've never heard of that. You're the only person that has that problem. So yeah, and before that I worked for Borders bookstores, if anyone remembers Borders.
I remember them.
I talked to somebody this week who looked like he was not that much younger than me, who's like, what's a Borders? I said, what? I said they were bigger than Barnes and Noble for a long time. But yeah, I did the children's department actually at Borders and for a couple years in Salt Lake, and then before that in the Princeton, New Jersey Borders, I was the literature person. I was their literature expert. And that was really fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good preparation for writing, working in
Oh,
bookstores and libraries.
exactly.
Yeah. So, what were your favorite books when you were a kid?
I really loved, well, I was really into horses, so I really liked the Walter Farley, the Black Stallion books, and Marguerite Henry's famous horse stories, Misty of Chincoteague and King of the Wind and all those. But I was also really into Diana Wynne Jones, who wrote Howl's Moving Castle. Yes, love Howl's Moving Castle and A Tale of Time City and Dog's Body were some of my favorites. I liked fantasy that was funny, really. Narnia, fine, but I read Howl's Moving Castle over and over. But I did also love, of course, The Hero in the Crown by Robin McKinley.
Oh, yeah.
That's the book I read in fifth grade that I decided, oh my gosh, I want to do this for a living. I'm going to be a writer, was when I found The Hero in the Crown. So, and The Blue Sword. Love those books.
Yeah, I hear a lot of people who ended up being really big fantasy fans that those books were kind of their entry point. And I read those books around that age too, when I was about 13, I think, was when I found them.
Was all we had, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
That's true.
In the kids department, that was it for fantasy. The Hero and
Yep.
the Crown, that was like it. What else was there?
The Lloyd Alexander books,
Lloyd Al Oh, that's true. No,
the
Lloyd
Prydain
Alexander.
ones. Yeah, but other than
I
that, there
loved
wasn't a
those.
lot.
Yeah, there was Lloyd Alexander, and there was The Chronicles of Narnia, and then there was and so when Robin McKinley came on the scene, because later than those, it was like huge. And they won awards, so they were everywhere. That's the reason why I think they really attracted attention is, first the Blue Sword was the Newbery honor, and then the Hero and the Crown came out the next year and was the Newbery winner. So every library had him.
Oh,
Because
yeah,
every
sure.
library didn't have all the Prydain Chronicles by Lloyd Alexander. They only had two of them at our school library of the four or five books. So it's okay,
Yeah, that's frustrating when a library doesn't have the whole series.
And they're so thin. So then, the Rob McKinley's books are thicker and there's
Yeah.
there, When you're looking for something to read because you're a voracious reader, the thickness of the book really matters,
Yeah. That is true.
checked out a bunch of books, my dad would go, "Oh, you're going to be done with those in a day." I'm like, "I know." Talking with somebody about books when we were kids, and I was like, "Yeah, there wasn't a lot to read." And then she started talking. I'm like, "Oh my gosh, no, yeah, there was that, there was this, there was that." I'm like, "Wow, I did read a lot."
We're ready to move into some questions that are more specifically about your body of work. And one of our members, who she goes on the site by the name Diane's Life is a Muggle, she asked, how do you go about planning and creating a world for a fantasy book like the Castle Glower series?
I am what's called a pantser, because there's what's called plotters, which means you fly by the seat of your pants. And so I don't sit down first and decide, okay, here is my magic castle. This is what it looks like. This is what language they're speaking. I actually just do it as it comes up in the story. I'm going along through the story, and then I say, okay, they need a name for their country. So here's the name for their country. So then that means the name of their language is, so the name of the country was Slane. So that means I'm going to call it their language Slaynth. And then what I do is I write everything on the computer. So I'll have a separate file, like a Word document that'll be called Castle Glower slash notes. And so when I come up with the name of a country, I'll hurry and put that in there so I don't forget. Like, okay, their country is Slane. The country next door is Grath, you know? And I just sort of do it as it comes up. Like, oh, there's secret passageways in the castle. And then I might make a note to myself, use secret passageways again. But, which I just finally did after four books. Or if I think of like an idea like, oh, it would be cool if they had, you know, griffins or something like that. In the first book, I just decided to put griffins like on their flag. And then so I made myself a note like, maybe griffins later. And that was like the whole note and then became like the point of all the other books. So
Yeah, that's
yeah,
actually
I
really
just sort of
interesting.
go as it occurs to me to add something. I'll just hurry and add something and then I'll make a note of it so I don't forget.
That's actually really kind of inspirational to me because that's kind of how I write, and I'm like, if I want to make like a really cool world like some of my favorite books, am I doing it
No,
wrong?
you are not.
Okay.
Any way that works for you is the right way to do it.
That's right. Okay,
Because I have tried to sit down and outline a book and go, okay, this is going to happen, then this, and they're going to have this in their world, and it doesn't work for me. I get too frustrated doing that. But if I just think of it as I go along, it works much better for me.
cool.
That makes some authors want to cry, but that's fine. They're different.
So, do you come up with stories first or characters?
It depends on the book. There have been some books where I thought like, oh, I would really like to use this character. What would this character be doing? And then there are some books where I think like, oh, I would really like to do a story about a magic castle, and then I find the character that would go with that magic castle. So Dragon Slippers was like story first. And then came up with the character, and but like Silver in the Blood was all about the characters, even though one of them was obnoxious, and I wanted to set it in Romania, and so then I had to figure out what they were doing there after the fact.
Okay. Are any of your characters based off people you know in real life?
Yes. But honestly, by the time you get going, they start out that way, and then after a while, you're like, this no longer resembles my brother at all, because obviously my brother is not like a knight or a wizard, you know? I always joke that, you know, actually, the most like me is Seelie from Castle Glower, because you know, youngest of four kids like I am, and two older brothers and one older sister. And then I always say like, except my oldest brother is a truck driver, you know, and hers is a wizard. So little bit different there. But I always kind of start out thinking like, oh, this character is kind of inspired by so and so. But you know, by the time they get going with their action sequences, they really are different from the person they started out as. So really, Seelie is not as much like me. I would honestly not have been as bold as she is about things, you know, and been as independent and not telling my parents that I was hiding a griffin in my room and stuff like that. I totally would have cracked and told them after one day. And then I always say, like, you know, Poppy in the Princess books is like me because she's super sarcastic, but I don't know, I think she's honestly a little nicer than me most of the
So do you, if you do base a character, you know, if a character starts out being based on someone you know, do you keep that to yourself, or have you ever told someone that they
I
inspired a
keep that to
character?
myself after the first time. The very first that I wrote, like way back in the day, it's never been published. It's just awful. Anyway, I started writing this book and I told my husband, we'd just gotten married, like literally days after we got married, I started writing this book, and I told him like, oh, her fiance in this book is based on you. And then by the end of the book, he had turned into such a jerk, and she had left him for someone else.
Oh, no.
I did not tell him this. I had forgotten to warn him. And he
Oh.
read the manuscript and was like, what? This
Oh,
is me? And he's so awful. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's right. Sorry. Yeah. So after that first time, I don't tell anyone.
Yeah. I remember Rosalie. She sent a question and she says, "I love the Princess of Glass and the rest of that series. Do you have any advice for writing about big families and making sure no one gets forgotten?"
Don't do it. It is too hard. It was so hard to keep track of those 12 girls. Honestly, Princess of Glass was such a relief because I left most of the sisters behind. It was so hard that actually, it wasn't even my editor, it was the copy editor, and they are kind of like the continuity checkers, like the very last people that see the book. And they checked to like make sure nobody's eye color changes or, hair color randomly changes. She actually kept track of when each sister talked in which chapter, and then she went through and told me, okay, so Lilac never talks in the first book. One of the sisters had no dialogue whatsoever. And so I went through and just randomly reassigned just some of the random comments to her. And then, like, there was another one where one of them said something and then was pretty much not even in the room when they all left the room. She wasn't even there anymore. And, I would have to go through and check that. It was really, really hard. So what I recommend is that if you're writing a big family, do keep track, like on a separate paper or in a separate file. Write down who is in each chapter and make a check mark or something if they talk in that chapter to make sure it's even. That's what I would recommend doing. Like, I am not organized enough to do it. Unfortunately, I have a copy editor to do it for me. But if you don't have that, I would keep track of who was in each chapter and stuff. I wish I had been better organized. I did actually sort of do it with Princess of Glass just to keep track of the three main girls because there was Poppy, her cousin Marianne, and then Ella, and just to keep track of like sort of who got FaceTime and who stuff was happening to, I did have to sort of make it look like a map actually, or like a spider, those spider outlines they have you do in school. Like circle Marianne and then shoot off chapter 7, chapter 12, and all this stuff. I actually had to map that out just to keep track of the three of them because since they all were supposed to be physically the same and sort of the same, and then, they replaced each other at one point, I had to keep track of them separately. That's horrible.
So in Dragon Slippers, Creel does embroidery and sewing, and in Princess of the Midnight Ball, Galen knits. I really like that you give handwork power in your world. Are those things that you do or
Thank
want to do, and do you have specific inspiration for giving those things the power that you do?
I'm knitting right now while we're talking. I'm making myself like a headband slash ear warmer for next year, probably. Now it's spring, but anyway. The thing is, like, I like the idea of, not everyone has magic power. You can't just lift up your hand and go Shazam and like blast these people back. So, like, what have you got? I really enjoyed that in Princess the Midnight Ball. What can Galen do? He's a soldier. Those are real skills that a soldier at that time period would have. They did, in fact, teach the soldiers to knit, because they would not send different sizes of socks or gloves or whatever to the front. They would send wool and needles, and you made your socks and your gloves to fit yourself and your hat so that your equipment fitted. And so that's a real skill he would have. And so I'm like, okay, so yeah, he could just go in and shoot everybody, but what if that's not as effective, because magic. The other people are magic and he is not. So what could we give him that would be different that they would not be expecting that no one else had tried? And so I went for the knitting. And I always loved it that it's in the real story of East of the Sun, West of the Moon that my book Sun and Moon, Ice and Snow is based on, that trolls cannot make things clean because their nature is foul. So the real story is that only his true bride can wash his shirt clean. So because this girl has been doing housework all her life too, she knows how to get wax off of a shirt. And the trolls can't do it. So that's, I mean, that's kind of the point of the story, is that, like, a good Christian woman who knows how to be a good housewife can defeat these foul monsters. And so I just love that. Because, yeah, I don't have magic powers, but I can actually knit, so
yeah,
maybe that will help one day.
Yeah. I like how, without completely, like, turning tradition on its head, you put little twists in the stories, like, yeah, dragons have hordes, but they don't necessarily hoard what you expect. Or, Galen grew up in the army, but it's not like she particularly likes to fight. Do you try to write those things in, or do they just happen?
Yes. I don't know. Pretty much what I'm looking for when I read a book is, show me something different. You know, there's a million versions of Cinderella out there, and I've done one too. But so I love to read them because I want to see what they've done different. So, you know, not everyone wants to fight. Not everyone who's in the army wants to fight. And I just thought, if he's a young guy, how long has he been in the army? Well, he can't have been in there that long, unless if he grew up in the army camp, because his dad was a soldier. So at that point, he would have seen some pretty horrible things. So maybe he was not a fan of it. It just sort of, like, grew out of thinking about his character. And yeah, the whole idea for the Dragon Slipper series was just, you know, if dragons can talk and think, you know, like people all collect different things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I collect books and dragons. Actually, I collect dragons. My oldest son collects seals. And at the time, he was just a baby, so we didn't have that to model him on, or I would have totally had a dragon collect seal toys. But yeah, I just thought, you know, if they're like people, if they can read, if they could write, if they can talk, if they can think, then they're going to not all just sit there on this giant pile of gold exactly the same every dragon. So it just sort of grew out of thinking about their characters, really. You know, everyone is a different person.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone that can talk and think is different, so they're all going to have different likes and dislikes.
Yeah, so your main characters are all really cool girls, but you've got really interesting male characters too. Rolf and Pogue are both people I'd love to be friends with, and Galen's also generally nice. You do really well at writing interesting characters regardless of gender, and I'm curious whether you made a special effort at doing that or if the characters just became that way on their own.
They're just that way on their own. Like, I don't know. I actually originally thought about just doing Princess the Midnight Ball, which did not have the word princess in the title originally, from Galen's point of view, because the whole idea to the story to me was, you know, who is this guy that comes to their castle, and even though all these other princes are, these princes are dying, he decides that he wants to help them, and he sticks around and stuff. And so I came up with his character first. It was honestly easier for me to write him than Rose, because he was clearer to me in my mind. And the fact that he was a guy, later somebody's like, oh, you did such a good job writing a guy. And I'm like, oh, I guess I did. You know, I didn't think, like, oh, what would a manly man be like, or anything, you know? But, yeah, just, and Pogue, like, who doesn't love a cute guy? And, you know, I just thought it would be funny if their sister had a crush on this guy that was always picking fights. He actually started out a little bit like Gaston from Beauty and the Beast. If you remember it, and somebody pointed this out to me the other day, like, wow, he is really different now, because the first time you see Pogue, he's been brought to the court because he's started another fight for stealing someone's girlfriend.
Mm, yeah.
And, and then he hangs around to flirt with Lila and cause problems. And by the end of the book, he is helping them fight the bad guy because he's just, like, a nice guy. And he can't help it if girls leave their boyfriends for him, you know? It just sort of is part of his character, but I really don't ever think, like, oh, a boy is this and a girl is that, because just people, we just need different people in the books, you know? So
yeah. So I have a more specific question about characters, and this might be a little technical, but I'm so curious that I have to ask it. So I'm wondering how you went about creating Lulath's dialect in the Castle Glower books, since it's often, you know, discouraged to write in dialect because they say it's distracting, but I'm impressed at the way that you were able to characterize his dialogue as someone who's speaking in a second language and make it sound sort of consistently like that. I was wondering if you had a particular trick or technique for pulling that off.
Yes. It is based on the German replacement of Homer Simpson's in an episode of The Simpsons. It is based on one line in a Simpsons episode. It is the one where Homer is running his own website, and he's called Mr. X, and he gets kidnapped and taken away to a mysterious island. It's based on the old TV show The Prisoner from the 60s. They replace Homer with a German soap opera actor, and no one notices. And like Bart says to him, like Bart notices for about a second and he says, "You look different today, Dad." And the fake Homer looks down and goes, "I am a new tie wearing." And that is what I think whenever I write dialogue for Lulette. He instead of saying, "This is a new tie," he says, "I am a new tie wearing." And so I always think like I will put the verb at the end of the sentence. Or the other thing that I started with was it was actually the first person you hear speaking the Graphian accent is the ambassador who's preparing the way for Lulath to come to the castle. And he says, "Our prince is a very man." And I was trying to think of like what would he say, like a funny word for him to say, like, you know, what if he said he meant to say like he's brave, but he said he's fancy or something like that. You know, our prince is a fancy man or something, and that would be funny. And then I thought, but then people will assume from that, you know, he's this or he's that, or that, you know, they might not understand. And I thought, what if he just left it off and said, "Our prince is a very man," and everyone's waiting for him to finish a sentence and say what kind of man, and he's done talking. And that was hilarious to me. So those are the two, those are there's so there's two guidelines to the Graphian dialect, basically. They're saying something is very, and then it's just very. That's like, and Lulaf does that all the time, like, "Oh my God, I am so very," and they all wait and he's done talking. Or else put the verb at the end of the sentence, like, "I am a new tie wearing," like, "This is a new dog having," you know, and stuff like that. And so that's how I do it. And I just every time I'm looking at his dialogue and wondering if it works, I think, would German Homer Simpson say this? And that's the
That's awesome. I was trying to puzzle it out if you had like some secret formula you were running his dialogue
That is the
through.
whole formula, because I thought, you know, I could make him sound French and try to do like a French accent, or I could make him sound Italian. But I mean, that becomes so stereotyped, like, you know, "Oh, wee oui, wee," oui, you know, or like, "That's a spicy meatball," or something. And I thought, I don't want to do that. That's awful. So I just thought, what would be even weirder? Or you're just like, wow, they do not speak this language.
You know, I have read some of the books of that series, and then I've also listened to the audio versions of them. And I was particularly struck that, like, when the person reads his voice, it sounds the same kind of as it sounded in my head when I was reading the text, you know, on paper.
Oh,
So
good.
I
I
thought
have
that
never
was
listened
neat.
to him because I don't want to know.
Yeah, I've heard authors say it's kind of nerve-wracking to listen to it, but I thought that the way that you wrote it must have been in such a way that, you know, they could pick it up. As a reader, she could pick it up what you were going for, because to me it
Oh,
sounded the
good.
same in my brain as it sounded on the audio version.
Oh, good. Yeah, because that's the thing. In my brain, I'm sure it sounds different from anyone else's brain, you know? And so I just thought, I don't even want to hear even anyone else talking with my audiobooks. I think, what if they're putting the emphasis on the wrong word in that sentence, or, you know, and they ask me, of course. In fact, they call me and I say to the reader, like, everyone's name and stuff like that, so they know what it sounds like. But I still think, like, what if she doesn't say their names right? I'm not going to listen. I just can't.
So, are there some of your books that you recommend for people who don't like particularly intense or scary things? in my opinion, Two States at the Castle isn't as frightening as some of your other books. Are there more like that?
Yeah, and mainly it's because it's intended for younger readers. So yeah, that was a big concern with those books actually, was how much danger can they be in without really scaring a young reader? Mm-hmm. And so I did with that one really try to make sure that it's exciting, and you know she's in trouble, Celie's in trouble, but without letting them think, oh my gosh, they're dead, like ever. Mm-hmm. So, which is really hard.
Yeah.
Because I always think, like, how you know, how much danger is too much, and how much is not enough? Like, oh, we don't care what happens to them because I'm sure they'll be fine. So it's hard to do that. But yeah, a lot of some of my books are intended for more teens, and so there you can be quite a bit scarier. You know, I tried to make the king under stone and thinking in the princess book so they might never leave that place be like really bleak and scary, and everything's kind of falling apart, which to me is always kind of creepy, like haunted housey creepy without there being actual ghosts. You know, the castle's sort of falling apart around them and they can't leave, and I would never do that in a book for younger readers.
Yeah.
So the castle seems like it's falling apart for about half a chapter, and that was it for me.
Yeah. So, on a similar note, are there books that you recommend people start with if they haven't read any yet? Your books?
It just kind of depends on how old they are. If they haven't read any of my books, but they're pretty young, I do say Tuesdays at the Castle. If they're a little bit older, like 11, 12 and up, and adults especially, I recommend Sun and Moon because it's not part of a series. So you can try it. And I think it's some of my best writing. So you can try it. And if you like it, great. You could move on to the princess books maybe. But I do recommend Sun and Moon because it's not part of a series.
And I definitely need to read it. That's one of
you haven't read it? You, what?
That's one of the only books of yours that I haven't read.
I forgive you.
As you write your books, is there a specific person or people that you imagine reading them?
I try not to, actually. Because if you start thinking like, oh, so-and-so is going to read this book, and then you maybe start writing to them, there might be a lot of people that aren't going to like the book. Mm-hmm. It's too hard to think about, like, who's going to read this, who's going to like this. I do sometimes kind of know, like, okay, as I'm reading through or writing something, I'll think like, oh, my editor is not going to go for this. Like, she's not going to like this part. And so if I really love that part, I'll, you know, be willing to argue it for it.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping it in, but sometimes I'll think like, no, she's probably right. That's not going to work. So I do sort of imagine my editor reading everything, but I generally I'm trying to write a book for me.
Mm-hmm.
I would want to write books that would be something I would want to read. You know, and I like all kinds of things, and I like fantasy, and I like fairy tales, and dragons, and griffins, and all those things, and I don't like to be bored, so. So really what I'm going for is, would I pick up this book and read it? Because if I would not pick up that book and read it, I stop, and I'm not going to write that book.
Yeah.
So that's usually my criteria is, it's the book is for me, and hopefully other people will like the same things I like.
Fair enough. Is there something that you hope that readers will take away from your writing?
I just hope they'll have a good time, honestly. I'm not trying to teach anything. If they want to learn to knit afterwards, that would be great. But but really, I just am trying to entertain people. I hope you have a good time. I hope it hasn't been like a slog, like, oh, I had to read this book for AR and it was terrible, you know? I hope they come away going like, wow, this is great. I would like to read more.
I've loved all of your books that I've read.
Oh, thanks.
So we have just a few more closing questions before we wrap up. And one is, what advice do you have for girls who want to be writers? And we get especially a lot of questions from girls about getting through writer's block and also finishing stories, because a lot of girls have trouble, you know, they'll start a story, but they have trouble finishing it.
Uh-huh. Yes. Excellent. Okay, so this is my First, I'm going to say this is my this these are the three things that I tell people you've got to do if you want to be a writer. You have to read. You have to be a reader. Mm-hmm. And you have to read all mm-hmm. kinds of things. Just, you know, if you are writing a teen fantasy book, don't just read other teen fantasy books, because all your writing will start to look the same. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. you should be reading poetry. You should be reading biographies. You should be reading murder mysteries, you know, whatever. Just so you have lots of good words and ideas in your head. So that's very important. The second thing you've got to do is write. Just write, write, write. And the more you write, I mean, it's a muscle. If you're in practice, you're golden. If you stop writing for a while and then you try to go back to it, it takes days to get back into your groove. After just 3 days of not writing anything, your brain, that the synapses in your brain that control writing have shut down. And it takes another 3 days to get them going again.
Wow.
So if you take 3 days off, it's going to take you 3 days to really get back into where you're writing well and things are really clicking. So you've got to write every day. And I even say, even if you're not working on a story, write down a list of names you think are cool that you would like to use. Write down a list of titles that you think are funny, you know, even if they totally don't go with any of your stories, think of some funny book titles. Like, what would be funny for funny titles for a murder mystery, and see how many you could write, you know, down in a few minutes, and just anything. Lists of whatever, lists of names, make up a bunch of new cities and stuff if you're not working on a story, and just write something. Because that really helps too with writer's block, because you keep your brain fresh and flexible. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing that I tell people is to keep it. If you start writing a story and you stop and you're like, you know what, this is garbage, don't throw it away. Keep it. Because you know what? In 6 months or 5 years or 10 years, you may find that story again, look at it and go, you know what? I could fix this and it would be so cool.
Yeah.
After the Castle books, my next book coming out from Bloomsbury will actually be a book that is based on a really, really cheesy short story I wrote when I was like 11. About this girl and her horse. And I've turned it into something that's like alternate history of World War I, like cavalry horses and stuff like that.
Wow.
It started as this super dumb, I mean, it's embarrassingly bad story that I wrote in a Cabbage Patch Kid journal because I really just wanted a horse instead of writing a journal. So, and then I found this in a box of stuff a couple of years ago. It was flipping through. I was like, oh, right, that time I wrote that dumb story about the horse. And I'm like, you know, actually, run with this now. I could work with this. So I always say save everything. So those are the important things. Are to read, to write, and to save everything you write. Now, the thing about writer's block, or like starting but not finishing a story, really true writer's block, there's, and I was just on a panel recently at Comic-Con with a bunch of fantasy authors like Terry Brooks and stuff like that, and I do not know who it was, but one of them said there's no such thing as writer's block, and the rest of us all like turned on him, like, what is wrong with you? Actually, I do know who it was, but I'm not going to name names, but it was not Terry Brooks, I will say that. very nice. But this person's just like, no, I write every day, all day long, and there's no such thing as writer's block. You're just, you don't have the talent. You don't have it if you have writer's block. I was like, and we all turned on him. What is wrong with you? Anyway, there's two reasons for writer's block. Either there is something wrong with you, and I don't mean there's something wrong with you. I mean, you might be sick. You might be, you know, depressed or under extreme amounts of stress, and you cannot write at that time. And that's fine, and you need to figure out what that is wrong, and you need to, you know, fix you. I have had writer's block when I have just been terribly ill and didn't really know it yet. Like, I had a terrible strep A infection. Strep A is not strep throat. It is, like, the flesh-eating bacteria. And you do not know you have it until you are in the hospital, basically. And so I just could not figure out what I was writing. And then I would look back at it later, it was like gibberish. And I'm all, what is wrong with me? So I was very ill. And I have had writer's block from having depression. So that it's real, and you need to figure out what's wrong, you know, and get yourself fixed, get to a doctor, talk to someone, you know, figure out what's wrong. The other reason for writer's block, though, is the book's fault. Sometimes you get writer's block, a story just sort of dead ends because it just is not working. And again, you may need to step away from it for 5 years or 10 years or something. It may never be anything. It may be a short story and you're trying to stretch it into a book, but really you just need 20 pages to tell that story and not 200. So you just, when it's just really, you're fine, but the story is not working, I always say step away from it. Write something else for a while, then look back at it. Even a week later, look back at it and think like, okay, is it because it's not meant to be a whole book? Or am I trying to make a short story out of a whole book, or is it just not working right now and just put it aside? Save it, but just put it aside. And those are really the two things. A lot of people that can't finish stories, it may be because they really should be writing short stories and they want to be writing a book, so they're trying to push this story into 300 pages when it could be 10. So that's something to think about too. Like, am I writing short stories or am I writing a whole book? But yeah, the middle parts of books are super hard. And for some people, what really works is to write the beginning, write the end, how you want it to end, and then go back and try to get them from A to B. Sometimes if you try to just go from A from the first few chapters and just really push through that middle to the end, you get tired and frustrated and you don't finish. Sometimes go write the parts that excite you, write the ending, write suddenly chapter 12 because something cool is going to happen there, and then try to connect the dots that way. And that works for a lot of people.
The only thing I'll say is the whole put a story aside and maybe it'll be great in 5 or 10 years sounds like an eternity to kids. Good
It sounds
advice.
like an eternity to me, but at the same time, that frees you up to have 5 or 10 years to write so many other stories.
Yeah, you don't have to just wait for that story to come back. You can do a lot of other things in the meantime.
Yeah, you're not just gonna never write for 5 or 10 years, but just if you write it and you suddenly are not super excited about it or you think it's just bad, just set it aside and do something else. There's other good ideas out there. You have to understand on my computer right now that I'm using to talk to you, I have the first chapters of about 10 books that have never gone beyond the first chapter. And they might
That's very nice.
someday, or they might end up being a short story. I just don't know yet. And not everyone is that way, and not everyone needs to take that much time, but still, that's me.
So you talked about how you're finishing edits on the Saturday book for the Castle Glower series. What else are you working on right now?
So, some secrets.
Oh, okay. We won't delve into your secrets.
I sort of off and on when I have time in between, because right now I'm under contract. I have Saturdays, and then I have that Stolen Crown series that I wrote and rewrote and rewrote. And so right now I'm waiting on some to see what my editor thought of the new rewrite. So when I finish Saturdays here, probably today, off and on when I have free time, I have a project that's not under contract to a publisher yet that I have been working on that I just don't even want to talk about. And I actually have two of those that I kind of go back just sort of as the mood takes me or how much time I have. And the one is, I will say this, the one is actually like a Christmas story, like a origin of Santa Claus type of story, because I'm a huge Christmas junkie. And so one is kind of like a middle grade, like where did Santa Claus come from? And I have been working on it off and on whenever I've had time. And so I always have something I could be working on if I've got time.
Neat, so mysterious.
So
Very.
mysterious. The other project is like super, super secret mystery project.
Oh boy.
And I've told that to a lot of people, so one day I will basically have a book come out that is called Super Secret Mystery Project so that people will
Yeah, we'll
know.
all be watching for it. So, Valentina, we've reached the end of sort of our prepared questions. Valentina, did you have any other questions that arose while we were chatting that you wanted to ask?
I don't think so.
And then,
It's been
Jessica,
very
was there?
interesting.
Yeah, it's been great. Do you have
Good.
anything that our questions didn't draw out that you wanted to be able to talk about?
No. These were really great questions. So, no, I feel like, yeah.
They were
I'm
great.
gonna.
When Valentina sent me her questions, in advance of the interview, I was like, these are awesome questions, and we were both really
Yeah.
excited to hear the conversation that would come out of them. So I'm especially glad to have the Lulath mystery solved. I was like, I've
Yes,
just gotta
very.
ask her.
The Homer Simpson, German Homer Simpson dialect.
Yes.
I
And the verb
never
at the
meant for him
end.
to be in this many books. I just thought, I honestly thought he would just be in that one book, but I liked him so much.
He is fun. I'm glad that he's stuck around for the other books.
Yeah, I love him.
Yes.
I think that we'll wrap it up, Jessica. The interview will go live on our website on April 1st, and I will send you a copy of the link to that. So,
Oh, great.
thank you so much for your time,
Sounds good.
and have a good
Yeah.
afternoon.
Yeah, thanks, you guys too. Get some sleep, Valentina.
Yes, that's right. Valentina, have a good
Go
night.
to bed now.
So, great to talk to you guys.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Yep, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Luna's Reading Corner podcast. Make sure to visit Luna's Reading Corner on the New Moon Girls member site for even more book and reading related goodies. Luna's Reading Corner is a members only area of New Moon Girls, so make sure you are logged in to get there. Until next time, happy reading!